Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is...
Mike Cosentino is here in the station on time.
Good. Today we have with us Daryl Johnson. Back in March of 2009, the Department of Homeland Security sent out a report to various police agencies talking about the rise in right-wing extremism. The report was written largely by Daryl Johnson. Are you there, Daryl? I don't hear him.
I'm here.
Okay, there you are.
All right.
Good. So the report is leaked to a kind of extreme radio broadcaster. Well, it's not like us. And he drops the report. It's picked up by Michelle Malkin, right? And she spreads it. It spreads to Fox News. I don't think I've read Daryl Johnson's report. I don't think any of these people read his report. They just ran with an attack. Now, this is a right-wing Republican attack. Again, they are trying to damage the Obama administration. They've tried to do it over again. They tried to do it with Solyndra. They did it recently with Susan Rice. They managed to keep her from being nominated to Secretary of State. I don't know Susan Rice's work or anything, so I'm not personally bothered by it, but I mean, it's another game they've run.
Let me make it clear what they attacked. He did a report. His job, and he's going to talk, we're going to let him talk in a minute, but his job was non-Islamic domestic terrorism, and he did his job. And
had been doing it for a while.
And what we're going to talk about this morning is that job and finding out about those groups and exposing them has been curtailed and certainly limited. And so our guest, Daryl Johnson, went and wrote a book called Right Wing Resurgence, How a Domestic Terrorist Threat is Being Ignored.
So the thing is that when you play these political games and they become too extreme and too partisan, then you actually damage the country. And there's been a whole series of these. So let's talk to Daryl Johnson. If you're not familiar with the case, but between Mike and I and Daryl, we'll try to bring you back to what happened. Daryl is, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background.
Yeah, my name's Daryl Johnson, and I've been a federal employee for over 20 years. Started working for the federal government back in July 1991. And in fact, the first 8 years of my career, I worked for the U.S. Army as a civilian and had the honor of coming out to your great state of Arizona to attend the Military Intelligence Officer's Basic Course back in 1996.
Fort Huachuca? At Fort Huachuca?
Yeah, down at Fort Huachuca. I spent 6 months there. And what a wonderful experience in Sierra Vista and Cochise County. And I even had taken a drive up to Flagstaff and got to see some of the beauty up in the northern part of the state. So that was the beginning of my career, was basically a civilian in the U.S. Army. And what my job was to monitor threats to our bases here in the United States. And at the time, there wasn't really much of a threat. I mean, now we've seen since 9/11 a lot of homegrown Muslims that want to attack some of the military installations. But back in 1996, we had a couple of cases involving militia groups wanting to attack what they perceived as foreign troops on our U.S. bases. And so that's how I kind of got an interest and got started in a career on this very topic. And in 1999, I transferred to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to basically be their subject matter expert on violent anti-government groups, which included white supremacists, militia extremists, and sovereign citizens that were committing criminal acts. And then in 2004, I was asked to basically head up a team of analysts at the Department of Homeland Security to look at domestic non-Islamic extremists. And this covered the whole political spectrum, not just the white supremacist, militia, and sovereign citizens, but also the animal rights, the earth rights, the anti-abortion extremists, as well as black supremacists. So we had kind of a wide range of movements to look at. And so
you're a professional analyst, right? You're not an Obama administration appointee. You say in some of your work that you're a Republican, registered Republican, and Mormon, and yet your report becomes so controversial.
Yeah, and you know, basically, I'm not a political appointee. I'm a federal career civil servant. And it, like I said, it spent over 20 years in government, 15 of those years studying these types of issues. So I had no political agenda whatsoever. I'm just basically doing my job, the same thing I have been doing for many years.
Did it totally surprise you that this became a major political attack on the Obama administration? Because you're in the Department of Homeland Security, right? And you're basically just doing what you've always done, which is track extremist groups.
Right. And we had had leaks of some of our reports in the past. In fact, back in 2005, a report that I had written about the Animal Liberation Front and Earth Liberation Front was leaked. Generated a little bit of controversy because people didn't understand why we weren't looking at right-wing extremists as well. But nothing to the extent of what we experienced in 2009 when the right-wing extremism report was leaked. So we kind of anticipated that the media would generally get a hold of it, but we never anticipated the public backlash and to the level and extent that it was carried up into the Congress and some of the congressional representatives and their criticisms.
Tell us about the report and tell us what problem did they have with it?
Well, the report was stemmed out of a telephone call that I got in January of 2008 from the U.S. Capitol Police, and they had tipped my team to the potential for Barack Obama to be running for president, and they wanted us to basically alert them if we saw any type of threatening chatter on the Internet from extremists on the different websites. And so we monitored that for about a month or so and didn't see any type of threats or any extremist chatter about Obama possibly announcing his candidacy to president. So at that point, we closed that request out, but we began to postulate and hypothesize, what if an African-American became president? What would that do to the threat landscape here in America? And as you know, since 9/11, an overwhelming amount of the U.S. Counterterrorism efforts have been focused on al-Qaeda and its affiliates, as well as this new phenomena of homegrown Muslim extremists. And so we anticipated that if an African-American was elected president, that it would shift the threat landscape from these homegrown Muslim extremists to the white supremacists and sovereign citizens and those types of groups. And so it would be a major shift in the type of threat that we would be seeing and facing, and we were hoping to at least warn law enforcement of this shift so that they could devote resources to the issue.
And you're a head of a group of, what, five analysts in the Department of Homeland Security at this time?
And there was myself and five other analysts. We were looking at all kinds of different non-Islamic threats in the United States.
So when did the right-wing extremist groups begin to surge?
Because they were... I'm sorry, Mike, I stepped on you.
That's right. We saw that statistic that 140... When Obama... In 2008, there was 149 domestic groups. That surged to 600 after his election. Is that true?
That is true. And so basically, by hypothesizing this, we began to collect evidence about what type of extremists were out there, what type of movements, what they were doing, and the types of activities they were engaged in. And so what we ended up seeing is as Obama, announced his run for president, we started seeing a little bit of, anti-government sentiment and starting to build some of the hate groups that we have been monitoring began to recruit more, and more of these groups began to organize and flourish. And so by the time November of 08 came around, we had seen basically a movement, a militia movement was pretty much on its last legs prior to 2008. There was actually less than 100 groups at that point. But by the time Obama was elected, those groups had surged to like 150. And within less than a year, we had over 300 militia groups. The Sovereign Citizen Movement was another movement that was on its last legs. And because of the economic collapse in 2008, along with you know, the presidential administration and its economic policies, we saw that movement just burst to the seams. I mean, we have literally hundreds of thousands of people that are subscribing to sovereign citizen beliefs. And same with white supremacist groups. The hate groups have been steadily growing over the years because of the immigration issue and some of the other national issues that we've had. But once the election happened, I'll give you one example to kind of illustrate the amount of growth we saw just in the white supremacy movement was this web forum called Stormfront, which is the largest white supremacist website on the internet. It normally gets between 10 and 15,000 members a year signing up. On the day after the election, we had 5,000 people sign up to Stormfront in one day. And within a year, the membership and users had doubled. We saw like about 60 to 75,000 people join.
Which election?
In a year.
2008 or 2012?
2008.
2008, yep.
Okay.
And it continues to grow.
Wow.
So you write a report about the possibility of the rise of white hate groups, extremists of all different kinds, and you're specializing in the non-Muslim aspect of it. Your report gets leaked, and the head of the Department of Homeland Security is the former governor of Arizona, Janet Napolitano, good governor, a smart woman, been a former prosecutor, a former attorney general. What happened? I mean, why did... You have a report, and I've read the report. It's not that long. It's 9 pages. There's not much objectionable in there. There's nothing in there that's objectionable if you have if you were given a chance to explain what you meant. A short report like that is always subject to some distortion. But what happened? Why didn't Homeland Security come to your defense if there was nothing wrong with your report?
After we had this phone call, we closed that out. We built all this information over the next year. In 2009, when Janet Napolitano was nominated to be the new Secretary of Homeland Security, and me and my team were actually very optimistic in knowing that Janet Napolitano was coming to Homeland Security because given her past career being the Attorney General in Arizona and being around during the Timothy McVeigh and Michael Fortier case, also handling the Viper Militia case back in 1996, we thought that she would actually come with some credentials to know and understand that there are other threats out there besides Muslim extremists in the U.S. And so we were very optimistic and encouraged by her nomination. And when she arrived at Homeland Security, she, you know, immediately sensed that there was, I guess, a resurgence going on in these different right-wing movements. And so she began asking questions to our office. There were some questions that she had on, you know, are we monitoring these domestic non-Islamic extremists? If so, you know, how many are out there? Are they growing? What's the cause of this? And so we began responding to these questions within the early days of her appointment to Homeland Security. And this was the first time in the, you know, 5 years I'd been at Homeland Security that we had a secretary that was interested in this topic. You know, Secretary Ridge and Secretary Chertoff, you know, they're primarily interested in defending the country against another 9/11 attack from overseas.
All right.
So here we have a secretary that's asking questions about the internal threat. And so we began answering these questions. And she finally came back with a couple of follow-up questions. She said, are we seeing a resurgence in these groups? And if so, is it because of the election of an African-American president? And, you know, what are we going to do about it? So because we had already collected this data based on a previous tasking by the Capitol Police, we already had a paper in draft, and so we began to use this paper as a response to the secretary's questions. And when we answered those questions, I went there to her office with my management team as well as the FBI. And the FBI briefed the piece about what are we going to do about it, because they're the law enforcement agency that could actually go out and arrest people and prosecute and investigate. My office, we were just responsible for researching and analyzing data. We had no authority to, you know, do wiretaps or to, you know, do search warrants or do any type of investigation. So basically the issues that came out of the paper, we had some major themes, but the two things that I think were taken out of context and caused so much of the political stir was buried in a footnote within our assessment. We had a very broad definition of what constitutes right-wing extremism. And when you take that definition out of the context of the paper, which was clearly violence, criminal activity, terrorism, and you just plaster it up on a screen without any background or context, it appeared as if the Department of Homeland Security was looking at conservatives.
It seems like a simple list, but it is those things that many of these extreme groups hold dear, like anti-immigration.
The other thing is,
and I go into great detail in my book on what went on behind the scenes about that definition and the different arguments going back and forth between the Civil Rights Office and our subject matter experts and the lawyers, and so.
Well, let's
that
talk
was the main issue.
Let's talk about the book for a minute, the great subtitle, "How a Domestic Threat is Being Ignored." Let's name some groups. You did name one, Stormfront. There's another one called Oath Keepers. Who should we be afraid of here? I mean, we don't want to play a talk radio game here and see just how much fear can we instill in our listeners, but you just wrote a book about this, so tell us who we should be afraid of.
All right, well, what we were looking at Homeland Security were groups that basically endorse or commit violent acts. So we were looking at movements that had long-established histories of violence and criminal activity, such as the white supremacist movement. We would look at people that subscribe to groups like Aryan Nations, the Ku Klux Klan, World Church of the Creator, these types of groups. And, of course, we were also concerned with sovereign citizens. You know, we've seen a huge amount of criminal activity out of that movement. And, of course, some militia extremists have been known to plot and engage in criminal activity, stockpiling illegal weapons and explosives and things of this nature. So we weren't talking about groups like the Tea Party. We weren't interested in those types of groups. They have extreme elements within the Tea Party that may serve as, feeders into more extreme violent groups. But quite frankly, we had our hands full with just the violent ones, those who had long established histories of violence. And, you know, we weren't interested in any group that had, basically exercising their constitutional rights and, for free speech and free assembly.
Good, I'm glad you said that.
As long as they weren't espousing violence and didn't have a history of violence, they weren't on our radar and we weren't concerned with them.
So in some ways, these actors haven't changed. That this is Aryan Nation, KKK. That for me, anyway, new ones would be Stormfront and the Sovereign. What'd you call them?
Sovereign citizens. There have been several shootouts in Louisiana and stuff. Some police have been killed by sovereign citizens.
Stormfront itself wasn't a group that we were interested in. It was more of a place that we could monitor and kind of see what type of. Chatter was going on, and to see if there was any criminal activity being endorsed on that website.
So, when does a militia group? There are militia groups here in Arizona, and I know people who've talked about joining one.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that cross over from being the right to bear arms and stuff to being something that's dangerous to the rest of us? I mean, how can we tell if we hear all this extremist rhetoric about Obama, this fierce attacks on him? How do we know that? Where does free speech end and something that's a potentially criminal or criminal activity begin? How did you define that?
We actually. Right after Oklahoma City, the FBI behavioral profile specialist came out with a militia threat topology. And basically it broke militia groups down into four categories. And so we referred to that methodology in our work at Homeland Security because it was sound and was proven over time to be an effective way to kind of delineate between militia groups that were just interested in, you know, carrying out their Second Amendment rights and just being prepared for any type of disaster or what have you, and to disassociate those groups, which are law-abiding and peaceful, from those that are more paranoid and are interested in attacking and plotting the overthrow of the government. And so part of that topology, the Category 1 group is just basically two or more people that possess firearms who conducted paramilitary training, but they had some anti-government rhetoric but had no criminal activity whatsoever. And so those types of militia groups, you know, we weren't concerned about.
What's the number four group? Tell what's the number four?
The number four is actually very rare. It's a terrorist-type organization that's actively going out and conducting bombings and bank robberies and things of that nature. We've only seen one or two in the 15 years that I was at Homeland Security. But we did see a lot of number two groups and number three. And what a number two group, what differentiates it from a one, is that it's rationalizing breaking federal firearms and explosive laws. So it's, again, under the guise of preparedness, but yet they're converting their firearms to illegal weapons, you know, fully automatic weapons. They're manufacturing homemade silencers, things of this nature. But again, they're not out plotting to attack the government. That's when you get to a Category 3 group. So the Viper militia that we had in 1996 would be a Category 3 because they were actually going out and surveillancing targets, videotaping, and talking about how they could, you know, attack a building or blow up the columns and bring a building down. So those are kind of the four types, and we were interested in any group that was committing criminal activity and especially those who were plotting terrorist-type activity.
So what happens with all the controversy is that they shut down your group pretty much that's monitoring right-wing terrorism. And I think Mike can have a list of right-wing terrorist activities since they shut you guys down. Excuse me. It's some of it's sort of borderline. Aryan Brotherhood in Texas arrested 34 people. They're mostly in prison, all kinds of plots and murders. And then there are people, here's a, you know, there's a guy, Israel Keyes, committed suicide, Alaska serial killer, and he was part of a racist theology movement called the Christian Identity Movement. So
yep.
People can emerge from a movement that's not itself criminal, that are criminal, maybe the rhetoric encourages them in a particular direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had actually mentioned the Christian Identity Movement in my paper, and people mistook that as meaning mainstream Christianity. Okay, Christian Identity is a racist religion that advocates that whites are the true Israelites and not the Jews, and that Jews are basically, you know, under the influence of the devil or what have you. And so that goes to show you some of the things that were kind of mischaracterized when we talked about Christian Identity. People thought we were attacking mainstream Christianity, which was far from the case.
Well, and it's a specific group.
Did they want to understand what you were actually saying, Daryl, or did they just want to play political games with it? What do you think? I mean, and this is it's now we've got several years of perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, my perspective is that this was a deliberate attempt by, you know, Republican Party to embarrass the president. There's, you know, if you read the scope of the paper, it clearly states what we're talking about. We're talking about violent extremist terrorists. Yet they were somehow able to pull things out of context and twist them for political gain in the hopes of, I guess, maybe getting some people turned against the new administration and perhaps you know, support the Republican cause.
What bothers us is, okay, Daryl Johnson gets attacked for a report coming out of Homeland Security as an analyst, which is bad for Daryl Johnson, but now it's bad for the rest of us because the name of your book is Domestic Terrorist Threat Being Ignored. So I want to ask the analyst, the Homeland Security analyst we're talking to here, Daryl Johnson, what's the fix? You know, is it as simple as just stop ignoring the homeland, the terrorist threats, the homegrown, the domestic threats?
Yeah, what happened when my report was leaked is not only did we have this backlash, but DHS decision makers made a calculated decision to shut down our work and reassign the analysts to different areas that had nothing to do with their area of expertise. And so we have now a void in analysis and, you know, threat assessment that used to be there. And it's at a time of heightened, increased, you know, right-wing extremist activity. So it couldn't have come at a worse time. And the purpose of my book was to correct the record because in the immediate aftermath, to try to manage the situation, there was a number of misstatements made by Homeland Security officials as well as people in Congress that were blatantly false. And, you know,
so tell us a little more about your book. Wait, let's repeat the title, folks, and where's and let's tell people where it's available, Daryl. Last time I looked at the website when we were talking in September, it hadn't come out yet. Is the book out and available now?
Yeah, it came out in mid-September. And, you know, the main purpose was to correct the record, you know, dispel with these false notions and some of the misstatements that were said.
This is a story of political cowardice. I mean, this is the big part. This is a story of political cowardice from Homeland Security.
It's much like the Shirley Sherrod case where they don't even find out what the woman has said and they fire her before they really get an actual look. Luckily, somebody taped her whole remarks, and we found out that the whole attack on her was fraudulent. The attack on you seems to be totally fraudulent and politically based. Tell us again the title of your book. Where is it available?
It's called Right Wing Resurgence, How a Domestic Terrorist Threat's Being Ignored. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Even the publisher, Roman & Littlefield, has a... You could purchase it from them. But I wanted to increase public awareness of this national issue and get the government to act. I wanted Homeland Security to, you know, reconstitute the mission. Even though I've left Homeland Security, I still feel it's a valuable mission to undertake. And believe it or not, here we are, 3.5 years removed from what had happened in 2009, and there's still only one analyst at Homeland Security that's looking at this issue. Nothing has changed in 3.5 years, despite the litany of attacks that we've seen.
So nobody's looking at the broader picture, Daryl. I mean, the FBI looks at particular criminal conspiracies and activities, but nobody's looking at the process, the background of how these things get generated, right?
Right, emerging trends, new criminal tradecraft that's being used, tactics. So, you know, just getting the government to acknowledge the problem, devote some more resources to the issue.
I want to make sure we get this in, Daryl. We want to make sure we're going to have a link to the publisher, Roman & Littlefield, on our website, vvid.org. We may have other links there also, but we certainly will have a link and a code available for you to buy Daryl's book at a little discount. And maybe we can have a link to his, your website is, DT Analytics?
Right. DT for Domestic Terrorism Analytics.com or .org. And one other thing, I don't know if you're aware of, but in, late September, there was a congressional hearing, the very first. I'd been calling for a congressional hearing on this topic, for about 2 years. And we finally had the first hearing. And I laid out a number of things that I think need to be looked at as far as improving the federal government's ability to monitor and assess, do threat assessments on these different movements and groups.
Excellent. Hey, we have less than a minute, Dan.
Yes, and folks, you know, go to the website, go to bvid.org, and you'll find a link. It'll be a couple of days or so before we have it up, and you'll get a serious discount on the book. We want to thank Daryl Johnson with being with us. I'm glad that you're still at work, even though you're not working for the government anymore, and keeping an eye on these groups. We certainly need somebody to do it, right, Mike?
Good for you blowing a whistle, sir. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Daryl.
Appreciate you allowing me to come on the show.
I apologize for, you know, for people, for what happened to you when you tried to tell the truth. It you know, sometimes you just pay a price for it. You've You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.